That music was composed especially for the Killing Fields, and it's called Memory from Darkness. The temperature is blast furnace as we drive out from Phnom Penh to meet Sam Rainsing, minority leader of the Cambodian National Assembly, opposition leader, president of the Cambodian National Rescue Party, and his formidable wife, herself an MP, and they are effectively the Turnbulls of Cambodia. A long-standing thorn in the side of Hun Sen, leader of the ruling Cambodian People's Party. Sam was forced into exile for 8 years in 2005 after the parliament stripped him of immunity from prosecution. Prosecution for what? He was charged with defaming Hun Sen, and later he was again charged in absentia for manipulating a map to suggest Cambodia was losing real estate to Vietnam. It's a particularly sore point for Hun Sen, who came to power back in 1979, effectively under Vietnam's auspices. Most recently, Sam Rainsy returned home in 2013 after a pardon from the king, but wasn't permitted to take part in what is a highly disputed election. The results suggest he won it, but he wasn't allowed to assume power. And yet somehow the two of them remain optimistic. I asked him first up for his reaction to the news of our most recent change in prime ministers.
Very exciting. This is democracy. So we admire what has happened in Australia. A change of prime minister should always be welcome, especially for a country like Cambodia, where we have had the same prime minister for more than 30 years. We have the same ruling party for 36 years. And it is time to change our prime minister here. So thank you.
Rainsing, you've been trying to do that for decades. Here you are, a party called Rescue.
Yes.
It is arguable that you won an election, but you are still not the prime minister.
Because Cambodia is a dictatorship, not very different from some dictatorships in the world, where presidents, prime ministers, heads of state cling on to power for decades. And our prime minister here even wants to establish a political dynasty. Not very different from North Korea.
Or the Bush, or perhaps the Clintons.
No, but there it's a democracy. It's the people. Here it is not the people. It's the rule of a party, or even worse, a one-man rule.
You are seen by many in the United States as Cambodia's Vaclav Havel. You are, and people like John McCain hold you in very high regard. Is your international reputation helpful for you here, or does it hurt you?
Whether it helps or not, I am happy and proud to have so many friends all over the world who know the difficulty that the democratic forces are facing in Cambodia. And I want to thank them for morally supporting us.
Are you getting tired of the fight? It has been a very long fight.
Never. This fight for freedom, for social justice, will never end. It will last as long as humanity lasts.
Let's go back over some of the recent history and some of your tactical choices. Following the elections in 2013, you and your party boycotted Parliament. You refused to take up your seats for almost 12 months. With the wisdom of hindsight, seeing the consequences of that decision, was it the right one?
It was very useful to show our strength and to make everybody realize the new balance of power. Without our protests, without our unprecedented demonstrations, without our show of force and our determination, the ruling party would not have negotiated with us and would not have made any concession. But eventually, we are satisfied because there have been reforms, especially election reform, because we believe that when we have credible election, then we would definitely win.
It is widely regarded that the election was stolen.
Yes.
But there has never been a real analysis of those figures.
Because the ruling party has never accepted any recounting, any checking. But according to all independent observers, the result was not right, did not reflect the will of the people. Otherwise, why the ruling party is so afraid to proceed to recounting of the ballots?
I concede that you have in fact made gains, that in your negotiations with the eternal Prime Minister, that there have been small victories at least. And part of the settlement between your party and his was that amendments would be made to constitution and election laws, reforms made to the National Election Committee.
Yes.
How much progress on this?
It's crucial to have a proper electoral commission to ensure that we have real election, democratic election. Otherwise, our fight will continue for many years to come without the people being able to show their will, their determination.
Don't you sometimes feel that you have been outmaneuvered by this most cunning of politicians, that you have been absorbed and, in a sense, silenced?
No. If you look at the trend, when I started the first political opposition in Cambodia, I was alone in the whole parliament. Then, at the second election, I had 15 members of parliament, followed by 24, 29, and 55. This is an uptrend.
Hun Sen has often appropriated, stolen your policies, claimed them for his own, and he promised a sweeping series of reforms, increased wages for teachers, garment workers, civil servants. Many political prisoners would be released. Has this happened?
No, and nobody believes Hun Sen. Nobody believes in his promises. He promises to improve the situation, to do good things. But the people know and realize that for more than 30 years, if he were able to do anything good, he would have done it already. We don't need to wait for another 30 years to see a better Cambodia.
There have been reports of you and Hun Sen holidaying together, posting selfies on
yes.
social media, and many say that you're looking more like a coalition team than an opponent.
No, we appreciate the culture of dialogue because this is a democratic culture. We want to replace the culture of elimination, the culture of killing. We want to replace this Khmer Rouge culture that Hun Sen represents with the culture of dialogue, which is the culture of civilized people.
I was talking to Samura about that interesting advertisement in today's Cambodian media where Ban Ki-moon warns the world about the shrinking of public space for dialogue, for vital discussion. And while it has no address, it does seem to be talking specifically to Cambodia. Many, many people in this country are afraid to talk, even to a humble journalist from Australia. And you must be often quite fearful for your own colleagues, your own party workers.
Yes, we have had to pay a very heavy price since I start the first political opposition in Cambodia. I lost more than 80 colleagues, 80 activists who were just assassinated. So we know that this is an uphill battle. It could be very costly, but we know that freedom cannot be taken easily. And I urge our friends all over the world not to take freedom and democracy as granted.
What is your personal relationship with Hun Sen? Are you cordial with each other?
We don't have the same culture. Before talking about the culture of dialogue, we must realize that there is a culture shock. He comes from a different world, from the Khmer Rouge world. And we have to respect each other, nevertheless, so that we can talk, we can help each other see a better way for Cambodia. We must stop killing each other. We must stop trying to eliminate physically or even politically. But as Cambodians, we must talk together and find what would be an appropriate way for Cambodia to develop.
I'm glad you've raised his connections with the Khmer Rouge. The foreign minister also has such connections.
Yes, the leadership, the current leadership of Cambodia is made up of many former Khmer Rouge. They may have changed clothes, but their mentality remains very identical.
Well, I was quite shocked to hear Hun Sen suggest that if he was to lose the prime ministership, there would be civil war again. That is a terrible threat to make.
Yes, this is a threat because he knows that he's losing ground, that fewer and fewer people support him. So he must intimidate them in order to remain in power.
Is it a threat that should be taken seriously, or is it sort of simply rhetorical nonsense?
People with Khmer Rouge mentality, they do not hesitate to kill. But I think this time they must think twice, because the world has changed.
You've been criticized recently for jingoism, for pressing the bigotry button in relation to Vietnamese people. It is something that politicians around the world often do. My recently departed Prime Minister Tony Abbott makes us afraid, or tried to make us terribly afraid of refugees. Why did you do that? Why have you used the anti-Vietnamese feeling politically?
We want to defend the interests of our people as members of parliament, elected representatives of the people. We have to listen to the complaint of Cambodian farmers living along the border who are complaining about losing their lands because of border demarcation. So we want to know what is behind this border demarcation process. But this is not the only issue that we are dealing with. The main issue is poverty in this country, and poverty is due to corruption. So we want the rule of law. We want a better governance based on democratic principles.
Vietnam, Cambodia have their problems, but also a significant trading relationship. Vietnam's second largest import source after China. Trade will increase to $5 billion US this year. Yet you believe that Vietnam has an unhealthy political hold over Cambodian politics.
Yes, but we would like to see the economic relation more balanced, because Vietnam has obtained land concessions at the expenses of Cambodian farmers who have been expelled from their land. Their farmland has been grabbed. So we want to see a relation based on fairness and to ensure that there are mutual benefit for the two countries and for all trading partners.
One of the things that strengthens Australian democracy is that we still have a trade union movement. It has been under enormous attack from the Conservatives in recent years, but it is in deep trouble here. You've had prominent trade union leaders killed. There's a lot of coercion against the very notion of the trade union movement. Does your party support wholeheartedly a trade union movement?
Factory workers are a biggest constituency for the opposition. Since the very beginning, we have been very close to the trade unions. Actually, I have helped found the first free trade union in this country, 1996. It is called the Free Trade Union of Workers of the Kingdom of Cambodia. And its president was killed in 2003. And two other union leaders from the same trade union were also assassinated a few years later. So you are right to say that the trade unions are in a very difficult situation. It is why we support the fight of workers who work in sweatshops and who are victims of abuses and exploitation.
This is a country with significant human rights issues. It is a country of profound poverty. And yet the Australian government, the outgoing Prime Minister and his Foreign Minister Bishop negotiated an extraordinary refugee deal between us and you, where Cambodia received $40 million in return for taking asylum seekers from Nauru, 3-4. What was your view of that deal?
We condemned this deal. I think this deal must be cancelled. It is shocking. Australia should have never tried to send any refugee to Cambodia. Cambodia is one of the world's poorest country with a very poor human rights record, especially regarding refugee rights. So this is the last place where you should send refugee. I think this is not serving the honour of Australia.
I'm sure you know that our new Prime Minister is an ardent Republican, and that many in Australia would like to see us become a republic at the death of the current Queen. I think that's the political prerequisite. I'm wondering about the role of the monarchy in your country. I've talked to any number of young Cambodians, and they are fairly indifferent to the monarchy. They don't see that as an essential part of Cambodia's future. Is it a politically influential monarchy, or does it observe the proprieties of constitutional monarchy?
This is not an issue, because there can be progressive monarchies and backward monarchies, the same with republics. So what is important is democracy that must take root in Cambodia.
So you've had absolutely no trouble with the princes from the royal family, for example, trying to get parties going to compete against you?
No, because they have lost credibility already anyway. Royals trying to be involved in politics have no credibility whatsoever. So we could maintain the monarchy as just as a symbol of the nation.
The question I've asked almost every prominent Cambodian, so I have to ask you, of course, is what are the three most important issues that the nation faces? In your view, number one?
The rule of law. this is anything but the rule of law. So in order to put an end to abuses, human rights abuses, but also endemic corruption, which is just destroying the country, we have to ensure that the rule of law prevail.
Number two?
Number two is social justice. We don't want to see this kind of growth that benefits only a small segment of the population. We want to see the whole Cambodian people enjoy decent living conditions.
And three?
Three, to ensure peace and good relations with all neighboring countries and with all countries in the world, as long as they respect our independence and respect our territorial integrity.
Might I suggest a fourth, and that is the environmental issues that have been caused by, or problems up the Mekong, but also the massive deforestation that's going on here.
This is related to the rule of law, because we have legislation, we have government decisions to protect the environment, to stop deforestation, but to no avail. It's just words, it's just decision on paper, because we have a judiciary that is not independent. A real judiciary in a real democracy would prosecute those who are plundering the country, with deforestation in particular.
Is the country being plundered by foreigners, or is it being plundered by Cambodians?
By Cambodians. I don't blame foreigners. The fault rests on Cambodians first. And we have to change leadership precisely in order to stop this plundering.
Let us assume that you win the next election, that it is beyond argument and you are the Prime Minister of Cambodia. How do you afford the reforms that you've already announced and anticipate? Where do you find the money for them?
It is based on computations made by people a long time ago, and those computations are still valid. Just to give you an example, according to the USAID, over 10 years ago, they assessed that corruption caused the state to lose every year up to $500 million every year. So it was 10 years ago. Now, I think you can double this figure. So with $1 billion a year, you can do a lot. You can increase the salary of civil servants. You can start a pension fund for the elderly. You can develop social action. And what we have promised is very little compared to the potential that can be achieved.
One of the things which I, when I'm not broadcasting for the ABC, I work for Rupert Murdoch, yes. And he would be fascinated to learn that you can have corporate sponsorship of army regiments here, that sometimes the army is effectively paid for by big business.
Yes.
This is a very attractive notion to a Western tycoon. How do you explain this to me? How is it that private companies can, in effect, own their own regiments?
This is the Middle Ages. Because with money, you can buy anything. You can do anything without the rule of law. So you have warlords who can pay soldiers, armed force, to serve their personal interests. So it is why the rule of law is so important.
I've just been reminded that it is not only private business that can buy into the army. but that the Chinese government is emerging as a chief benefactor. How do you view greater Chinese involvement in your country?
I think any people, any investors would take the opportunity to use any loopholes for their own profit. So the responsibility lies with the Cambodian people to ensure the rule of law and to close those loopholes.
The rule of law, the rule of law, you say it over and over again. Number one problem.
Number one. Because in this country, it's the rule of the gun and the rule of money. I want to replace the rule of the gun and the rule of money with the rule of law.
Talking about law, a final question I have to ask you. How do you feel about the infinitely slow progress of the investigations into the crimes of the Khmer Rouge?
Because the ruling party and the government are not interested in seeing the truth exposed, and even less to be just to see justice done. Because
so it's a tactic, it's a strategy to slow the thing
yes,
down.
Yes, to buy time so that the main witnesses would die naturally of old age, and then they will be outside from
prosecution. Yesterday I talked to one of the two survivors of S21, 85-year-old man.
Yes.
Not many witnesses left.
No, and this is a tactic. And we are very frustrated because those who have killed millions of people, they have their network, they have their accomplices, and some of those people are in the current leadership of Cambodia.
Perhaps one of the reasons that the Prime Minister is escalating the threat level is because he is fearful of his political future.
Yes, all the more so since we have a new electoral commission, since it would be much more difficult for the ruling party to cheat elections as they did in the past. They have to use other means to try to weaken us, using their subservient judiciary to put us in jail and to get rid of us, politically speaking.
I've heard some extraordinary stories about the modes of intimidation. One was that villagers were told that there was a satellite up there that was looking down at them as they went in to vote, that the government could see who they were voting for.
Yes, it still works with some people, but now with the youth, with more educated people, it doesn't work.
It's also fair to say that many of the young people we spoke to are disinterested in party politics. Like kids around the world, they think they're all the same. Both sides, they're all the same. And they are looking for new forms of political participation. Good thing, bad thing?
Very good thing. We have in Cambodia the same ingredients for a revolution, I mean a peaceful revolution, like in some Arab countries.
Or like Vaclav Havel.
Yes, but these show the strength of the human spirit. Nothing, nobody can crush the human spirit. And as long as...
It was very nearly crushed here.
Nearly, but not crushed. So we will continue the battle because we believe that eventually justice and democracy will prevail. Thank you.
Sam Ranzing, thank you. That was great fun.
Sam Ranzing, head of the Cambodian National Rescue Party, which I think needs to be rescued itself. Next Thursday, Tara Winkler will outline the problems of child exploitation caused by the proliferation of fake orphanages in Cambodia. And we talked to Yuk Chang, whose work in documenting the killing fields would ensure the next generation can be taught its country's history, whether the government likes that or not. Stick around now for the news on RN.